We'll hear argument first this morning in number 87-1061, National Collegiate Athletic Association versus Jerry Tarkanian. Mr. Lee, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The question in this case is whether the National Collegiate Athletic Association's enforcement of its own standards among its own members is state action for 14th Amendment and Section 1983 purposes. In the early 1970s, the NCAA began an investigation of certain alleged practices at the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, some of which involved its basketball program. As is the case with all NCAA investigations, the primary responsibility for the investigation rested with the university, and both the university and the association conducted their own investigations. The association's council ultimately affirmed some 38 of its infractions committee's findings of violations, 10 of which involved the respondent who had become the head coach after the time that the association first received complaints about UNLV. As part of the prescribed remedy, UNLV was directed to show cause why three persons should not be suspended from coaching and any involvement in intercollegiate athletic activities. Those three persons were the former head coach, the respondent, and an assistant coach. As to the former coach, the suspension was to be permanent, and as to the other two, the suspension was to be for 2 years.
The suspension from what, Mr. Lee?
From coaching and from all involvement in booster activities and other intercollegiate activities. It would not have affected his university appointment.
So the NCAA said, in effect, to UNLV, you must suspend so-and-so for a certain period of time?
Not quite. What it said was, it was an order to show cause why they should not do so. And that is an important point, actually, Mr. Chief Justice. Pursuant to that order to show cause, the president of the university assigned a vice president as hearing officer who held a hearing, and then, as a result of that hearing, identified for the president three options that were available to the university. And according to the hearing officer's recommendation, those three options were the following. The first was that the university could impose the recommended discipline, which would involve the 2-year suspension. A second was to refuse to do so. And according to the hearing officer, this ran the risk that the NCAA might impose other sanctions, some of which might be more severe. And the third was to withdraw from NCAA membership. Faced with those choices, the university opted to impose the suspension, which has never been carried out, because of an injunction which was ultimately affirmed by the Nevada Supreme Court, whose state action holding is now before this court for review. The respondent does not contend, nor could he, that the NCAA itself is a governmental entity. Rather, his argument is...
Mr. Lee, did the injunction run against the NCAA as well as against UNLV?
It ran against UNLV.
Well, then how did NCAA get in the case?
Initially, they were not. The case went up to the Nevada Supreme Court a first time, and the Nevada Supreme Court held that the NCAA was an indispensable party, so it went back. The NCAA was joined, and then it went up a second time.
And the Nevada court made that at the instance of the association.
Appearing as amicus, that
who,
is correct.
Who said that they were an indispensable party.
That is correct.
Party.
That is correct. That is correct. But we were not joined initially. We contended that we should be, and ultimately the Nevada Supreme Court agreed with us on that issue the first time.
Jesus.
NCAA was indispensable, Mr. Lee?
Well, because the judgment that would ultimately come out of the court, would necessarily have an important effect. After all, it was our determination that was the appropriate remedy for the violation of our rules.
Well, it's a little strange to be arguing in a way that NCAA was a necessary party to the action, and yet should not be considered in any way a state actor.
Well, and of course, that gets
the tension there.
Yeah, no, I think not. Because what this court said in 1982 about what are the standards for determining state action, and they are not the same standards as for determining whether a party is indispensable. And those two, there are two requirements that this court announced in Lugar versus Edmondson Oil. The first is that you look to the substantive rule that is being enforced in the particular case and inquire into whether that rule has its source in some state authority. And the second is whether there is sufficient interlinking, intermeshing between them.
Do you think that Lugar was intended to be the definitive statement of how we determine state action in all cases, even those of perhaps delegation or joint participation?
Well, of course, Justice O'Connor, you know much more about what the court intended.
But you're arguing that's now
correct.
The definitive
yes,
rule.
Yes, and I do.
I'm not sure that I can read Lugar that way, and I'm not sure whether those tests should be applied in all situations of delegation.
And our argument is that they should. Maybe not on its face, it appears to say all cases. And it announced two requirements, and it said that the difference between the two requirements is demonstrated by two of the court's landmark cases, Moose Lodge, which demonstrates the rule of decision or the rule of conduct requirement, and Flagg Brothers, which demonstrates the state actor requirement. And both of those, of course, reach far beyond the context in Lugar and far beyond the context in this case, and therefore, in our view, it is a general rule. But you don't have to go that far. Excuse me.
Well, what if NCAA said, for example, we want drug testing of all participating athletes on a regular basis, and you either do that or you run the risk of the school being dropped out of the NCAA. Now, is there any... do we have exactly the same kind of an issue that we have here?
Not quite. If, as I suggest, as a first line of defense, Lugar applies across the boards to all cases, then it would be the same. But in any event, those two tests, and particularly the first one, ought to apply in a case such as this, and here is why. Even if it is not the principled two-part across-the-board test in all cases that we think, at the very least, when the sole issue in the case is whether a particular rule of conduct has been violated, as it has in this case, the NCAA standards for eligibility and recruitment, then at the very least, when that's the sole ultimate issue in the case, then one of the relevant inquiries in a case-by-case approach, one of the most important inquiries, ought to be whether the rule of conduct in that particular case had a governmental source or a non-governmental source.
Well, Mr. Lee, how does the rule become applicable to Mr. Tarkanian? Sir, it's an NCAA rule, but it also becomes a school rule.
No.
Because they join. They join, they're a member. They say, we agree to abide by the NCAA rules. So this is now the rule for this institution. Otherwise, how did he get in trouble with the university? He violated one of their rules.
Yes. The NCAA is composed in part of public universities and in part of state universities. But it cannot be the rule, I submit, but simply because you have some state universities and some private universities that thereby becomes.
Well, do you find something erroneous in what I said, that it became a university rule when the university joined and said, we agree?
It really was not a university rule. It remained.
Well, if it wasn't, how did they have the nerve to suspend Mr. Tarkanian?
They had the nerve to suspend Mr. Tarkanian because they decided, on the basis of their exercise of their own judgment, that of the three options available to them, that was the one that was preferable to them. But it was not the NCAA that suspended Tarkanian.
It certainly wasn't. It was the university.
That is
for
correct.
For violating its rule.
No, for violating... The university suspended Tarkanian not for violating its rule, but rather because it determined that of the three options that were available to it as a result of the order to show cause, the one that was most in the university's interest was the option to impose the recommended suspension.
Even if the university suspended him for violating a university rule, that might make the university a state actor, but I don't know why that makes NCAA.
Precisely.
Well, what relief did the Nevada courts grant against the NCAA?
The relief was against the university and not the NCAA.
Well, then what business has the NCAA got here?
Well, there's an injunction against the NCAA from taking any action against the university.
That is correct.
Well, then there was relief granted.
Well, excuse me, in that sense there was. That is correct.
The NCAA is prohibited from taking any action against UNLV.
Exactly.
That is correct.
And you also have to pay his fees, don't you?
90% of them.
Yeah.
90% of 90% of the.
Mr. Lee, I'm a little confused about what was the basis for the firing here. It seems to me if the man has an employment contract with the university can't say we're firing you for breaking somebody else's rules. He must have violated some rule that was imposed by virtue of his employment with the university, isn't that?
The rules that he violated were the NCAA's rules of eligibility and recruitment.
Well, how did they become applicable to him? I assume they became applicable to him through his employment contract with the university.
They became applicable. They became applicable to him only because the NCAA prescribed. We have determined that these violations have occurred, and the university was ordered to show cause why, as a result of those violations, he should not be suspended. But it was the university.
But he must have had an obligation to someone not to commit those violations. To whom did he have that obligation?
He had an obligation to his university in the sense that the university was jointly responsible with the NCAA for seeing to it that they did agree that they would enforce those rules. But my point is this, that if you take seriously what this court said in Lugar about looking to the source of the substantive rule, this is the classic case in which that requirement applies. Because if you look to all of the factors that might enter into whether or not there is state action, the only issue in this case, at the end of the day, the only substantive issue is whether some rules have been violated. Those rules are the eligibility rules that have been set by the university, that have been set by the NCAA. And they have become the university's rules only in the sense that the university is one of those members. But the university did not have to dismiss him. There were other options that were available to them. And particularly in a case where the only substantive issue is the issue whether or not particular rules have been violated, then the source of those rules ought to be relevant to the state action issue.
Take action against him.
Excuse me?
The university decided to suspend him.
That is correct, but that
and,
is...
And they decided, well, this is one of our rules that we're going to insist he abide by.
This case, in that respect, Justice White, really follows a fortiori from this court's holding in Blum versus Uretsky. In that instance, what you had was a decision to transfer patients from a lesser care facility, or excuse me, from a higher care facility to a lesser care facility, and the decision was made. The rule of conduct or the rule of decision in that particular instance, if you will, was made by private individuals. But once those private individuals, the doctors, made that decision, it had an effect on important governmental interest. The governmental decision as to how to treat these individuals, the Medicaid program is a governmental program, but the relevant decisions were in effect made by the private entities, including the amount of money that would be spent by government. Nevertheless, what this court said was that all that the government had done was to respond to those private decisions, and that is exactly what we have in this instance. You have the NCAA having set its rules, and its members then responding to determination of those rules violations, and that we submit under Blum versus Uretsky and under Lugar is not state action.
You have a state arbitrator who says that there are three choices, but that the only viable choice is to allow the university's delegation to the NCAA of the power to act as ultimate arbiter of these matters, and the president of the university adopts that determination. These are state officials who announce that the NCAA must be the ultimate arbitrator. Do we not give some deference to that conclusion by the state officials as a matter of state law?
As a matter of state law, of course you give deference to them, Justice Kennedy, but the issue here is whether the state action rules, which are, of course, constitutional determinations and interpretations of Section 1983 by this court, and what the state did in that instance was simply to determine, yes, we became members of the NCAA. When we become members of the NCAA, we determine that we will abide by their rules. But they also identified that they had their other options.
Were their conclusions correct? Was the arbitrator correct in what he identified as alternative two?
Yes, I think he was. Yes, he was. Alternative two was that they could have said no, and they could have then other sanctions would have had to be.
He was correct that the university's only real option was to recognize NCAA as the ultimate arbiter.
Well, I don't know that he identified that as the only real option. It was his recommended option, but I think this point should be made very clear. UNLV did not have to fire Tarkanian. That was their decision, their option, and they made it from a choice of those three. Moreover, this first requirement that the court established in Lugar, in any event, is absent in this case, and regardless of how far it extends, it should be applicable in a case such as this. I think that the key to decision is to draw a careful distinction between what the NCAA did on the one hand and what UNLV did on the other hand.
Mr. Lee?
Yes.
Let me return for a moment to this line of question. What does Mr. Tarkanian lose if you win here?
Well, that is, we believe that if we win, this court, pursuant to the exercise of its equity powers, does have the authority simply to dissolve the injunction.
Even the injunction against UNLV?
Well, we believe that that is basically what happened in Moose Lodge, and that this court would have the authority to do that. But that is not a central part of our case, and the court, in the event that the court disagrees, then that is basically UNLV's problem, because this will be the status of the case in the event.
So what does Mr. Tarkanian lose if you win?
At the present time, he has an injunction against UNLV that...
And there's no reason to think he won't keep on having that even if you win here.
And in that event, in the event that happens, then here will be the status of the case. There is still outstanding an order to show cause applicable to the University of Nevada. And at that point, there will still be three options available to the University of Nevada, except that the third one will have changed. And the third one will be to go back to the Nevada State Supreme Court, or to go back to the Nevada Court, and attempt to persuade them that the injunction should be dissolved because it was based on a premise which the United States Supreme Court has now declared to be faulty.
No, but if you win, it means that you represent the NCAA, I take it.
Yes.
And you want the injunction against the NCAA dissolved.
That is correct.
And if that's dissolved, it means that you can take action against the university.
That is correct.
And you may or may not.
That is correct.
But the university isn't a party here. Only Mr. Tarkanian's a party.
That is correct. The university is not a party to the action before this court. And as a consequence, it will be just as Justice White said, we can then take action against the university.
Mr. Tarkanian's suit, he got an injunction issued against the NCAA.
That is correct. And that, of course, can be dissolved. And in the event that that happens, then the university...
Was it at his request that the court enjoined the NCAA from doing anything to UNLV, or was it at UNLV's request?
Well, they weren't a party.
Excuse me?
The university wasn't a party, was it?
Yes, the university was a party. They did not appeal to the Nevada Supreme Court. They did not appeal to the Nevada Supreme Court. But there will still be an outstanding order to show cause pending the NCAA's order to show cause pending against the University of Nevada. And they will then still have the same three options, except that the one option will now be modified because they will have to either go back and attempt to persuade the Nevada courts that the injunction was...
Why isn't this case just moot if Mr. Tarkanian can't win anything?
Well, it isn't moot for two reasons. Because, in the first place, we do have the matter of the attorney's fees.
But if the only outstanding question is fees, does that keep a case alive? We've said costs don't.
Well, I would hope the $200,000 does. I would think that fees certainly does. But in addition, more important even than the
fee point, Mr. Lee, isn't it true that the only justification for the fees was the 1983 action, which in turn depends on the state action?
Yes, and that's what I was about to say.
That's why no matter what we do, we have to decide that.
Yes, and that, of course, is more important, is even more important than the fees itself, because you do have an outstanding determination by a state Supreme Court that this area of individual freedom, which is guaranteed by the limitation of the state action doctrine, as the court said in Lugar, has been withdrawn from the NCAA, and its ability to conduct its investigations in the way that it sees as in its best interest has been severely curtailed. Let me just say that there are, in addition to the legal reasons, that neither one of the Lugar tests, neither the rule of conduct issue nor the joint participation issue has been satisfied in this case, there are good reasons why the state action rules should not apply to the NCAA's enforcement of its own rules among its own members. This court said 4 years ago that the NCAA plays a critical role in the maintenance of a revered tradition of amateurism in college sports, and there can be no question but that it needs ample latitude to play that role. This is the classic case that illustrates both that critical role and why it needs ample latitude in order to carry it out. The procedures that it follows place principal responsibility or divide the responsibility for enforcement as between the two. It is not a strictly adversarial kind of procedure. What the NCAA has concluded over the years is that it can best be done by a combination of cooperation and adversarialness. And the accomplishment, that ample latitude that this court observed that the association needs to carry out its critical role, will be aided by leaving this area of associational freedom continually available to the NCAA so that it can make its own judgments as to how best to carry it out. The key to decision, I submit, to this case is to distinguish rather carefully between what the NCAA does on the one hand and what the university did on the other. What the NCAA did was to set its own standards for conduct. Because they were the NCAA's standards and not the university's standards, the first of the Lugar requirements has not been satisfied.
But didn't the university make those standards its own by contract?
Well, I think not. And I think to characterize it in that way, Justice O'Connor, really does violate the spirit of what I think to be not only Lugar, but also this court's most recent pronouncement in the area, which is West versus Atkins, in which those two requirements were repeated. As the Lugar opinion says, they really aren't the same. They are two separate requirements. And especially in a case where the only substantive issue at the end of the day is whether rules have been violated, you ought to ask, where do those rules come from? Those are not UNLV's rules. They are the NCAA's rules. They are UNLV's rules only in the sense that UNLV is a member of the association. But the association itself is a private entity, and the association is the source of the rules. What the university did was, what the NCAA did not do was to make the decision, was to suspend Tarkanian. All that the NCA did in this respect was to determine that its standards of conduct had been violated, that its conditions of membership had been violated, and then it was the university that exercised its choice among three options available to it. For two independent reasons, therefore, we submit that the judgment of the Nevada court should be reversed. Chief Justice, I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. We'll hear now from you, Mr. Lionel.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'm looking at page 3 of our brief here, and I'm reading from the NCAA enforcement program. Among other things, it says, the enforcement procedures are an essential part of the intercollegiate athletic program of each member institution. Thus, when the university became a member of the association, its enforcement procedures became a part of its athletic program. Not only that, by becoming a member, the university agreed to abide by the Constitution, the bylaws, the rules, the interpretations of those rules, and the policies of the NCAA.
Question that there was state action in the case, in the sense that the university is a state actor and it did the suspending. But why is the NCAA a state actor? That's the question.
The NCAA is a state actor because the university delegated to the association the right to make the disciplinary standards and determinations and have a rule of conduct as it did here. And that comes clearly under the Lugar, this delegation under the first prong. Mr. Justice.
So this is a sort of a joint action case?
Absolutely. In our view, yes.
And you say the university delegated to the NCAA or the NCAA delegated to the university? Which?
No, the university delegated to the NCAA the right to set the standards, disciplinary standards, with respect to state employees involved in the athletic program and to make determinations as to whether there were violations of those standards and to impose penalties against state employees for their claimed violations of standards.
Did the university delegate to the NCAA the authority to make the final decision as to whether someone should be suspended or not?
Yes, it did. And that is exactly what happened here, because the NCAA said that Coach Tarkanian should be suspended for 2 years. And the hearing officer, who held a hearing under the procedures contained under the NCAA enforcement procedures adopted, said that this is what we are contractually compelled to carry out that sanction, and recommended to the president of the university that it be done. And the president of the university, within 2 days, wrote Mr. Tarkanian and said, I have no alternative. We are contractually bound to follow the penalties of the NCAA, judged by the NCAA, and you are therefore suspended for 2 years.
When you say contractually bound, what is there a term of years to a membership in the NCAA?
I'm not aware that there is.
And is there some liability, some financial liability, if you pull out?
There is no direct financial liability.
Well, then how can you say you're contractually bound? The fact is they could have repudiated the contract at any time.
We
do our own hiring and firing. We don't like this particular decision, and therefore we will no longer be part of the NCAA.
But as the record indicates, the NCAA is the only game in town. If a university wants to engage in major athletics, it must be a member of the NCAA. If it is not, it cannot engage in major athletics.
This was an adhesion contract. The state of Nevada has been subjected to an adhesion contract, is it?
Well, that's actually what happens in this instance here. But that is the only game in town. And as a matter of fact, what happened here is, initially, Coach Tarkanian sued only the university and obtained an injunction. The university was requested by the NCAA to appeal that, which it did. And then the NCAA filed an amicus brief, taking the position that it was an indispensable party because the injunction against the university impaired the right of the NCAA to enforce the penalties which it had judged under its program. And in that amicus brief, it said the following, that the university was bound by contract to abide by the NCAA penalties.
Even if it wasn't bound, even if it could just have said, sorry, we're not going to suspend Mr. Tarkanian. Even if contractually he could have done it, they didn't. They said, they did just the reverse. They said, we will abide by the...
Yes, they did. And in any, almost every state action, there is an option on the part of state actor and on the part of the state. When the state fires somebody and there may be a constitutional violation involved, 1983 case, they could not have fired that person. There's always an option.
Well, the record looks like the university basically agreed with Mr. Tarkanian here and did not want to fire him and didn't agree with the NCAA's assessment of the facts and chose not to appeal the state court decision that said the university couldn't suspend him. And it looked very much like the university is not acting jointly in a sense, in that sense, with the NCAA. It basically took Mr. Tarkanian's view of the thing.
I submit that Justice O'Connor, is not really what happened here. Under the rules, the university was supposed to cooperate when charges were filed. And they did. They investigated it as they were required and filed everything that was filed, participated in the hearing. There's nothing in the rules that say that the university must lay down and agree with everything the NCAA did. It filed charges. And they admitted some of those charges, and in some cases they did not admit those charges. And the union and the Committee on Infractions made determinations. And then they said that Coach Tarkanian, the university, suspend Tarkanian for 2 years. And when he came back, the hearing officer said that the basis for those findings and the sanctions appear to be clearly in doubt, and the due process that was followed was somewhat suspect, but we are contractually compelled, and therefore you should do it, Mr. President. Mr. President said we have no alternative. We will do it. We will say that there was joint participation at all times. It's true that the university did not agree with what had happened.
Mr. Lyman, are we bound by the ruling of the Nevada court that the NCAA is a party and has to be a party? Is there nothing we can do about that?
Justice Marshall, it would appear that that is a, may very well be law of this case, particularly when it came into being at the instigation of the association. This case was over, we thought, many years ago until they filed that petition to the amicus
brief. That amicus brief determines what we shall do?
I may have to withdraw. I would assume that this court can do what it wishes in this case here.
No, I don't mean that, but I mean... It seems to me that this is a crucial point, and I just want to know...
It would seem to me that one could very well say that the association should not be permitted at this time to say that we claimed that we were indispensable. This case has gone on for years only because the court agreed that we had rights to protect at that time. Now we're saying we should not be a party. I think arguably it could be a stop from taking that position.
I thought that's what you were saying all along.
Mr. Lyon, in looking at our cases, although they're all not all easy to reconcile, there does appear to be one common theme, and that is that the entity in question must be held to be a state actor or there is no relief. Mrs. Marsh in the Company Town, Eagle Coffee Shop, the Luger case. Here the state remains a party. It remains responsible. It remained obligated to Tarkanian not to discharge him. Why is it necessary for the NCAA to be in the suit for any meaningful relief to be given to your client?
If the NCAA is not enjoined from proceeding against the university and to take steps which might ultimately throw the university out of the NCAA, the victory of Mr. Tarkanian is a hollow one, because there will be no basketball program anymore. He will have nothing to coach. He will not be able to get a job coaching college athletics because of what has happened in this particular case. The rules say that before any university hires someone as a coach, they should check to see what his history may have been with respect to any claim violations against the NCAA. And I submit under
those... Did he claim a reputational interest in this case? His argument is that he wants to keep his job, and he won that argument. His argument is he wants to keep his position, and he won that argument. The university is there. It's a responsible entity. It's subject to the jurisdiction of the court for all of the relief that he sought. And so it seems to me that under our cases, there's no necessity for finding the NCAA to be a state actor.
I would say he would have no victory. And not only that, whether or not, certainly he has, in our view, a 1983 cause of action, because the NCAA is a joint participant.
But you never asserted that in the Nevada courts. You didn't sue the NCAA.
Well, what happened was we amended the complaint after the reversal and remand so that the NCAA could then become a party. We amended it and stated a 1983 claim against the NCAA. So this present complaint is against both the university and the NCAA, stating claims under 1983, and the courts below found, the trial court found that there was a 1983 case against both. Only the NCAA did appeal to the state court and is here. There clearly is a claim, and our position is that there is such a claim, that the NCAA is a joint participant, that the NCAA under West versus Atkins was delegated these disciplinary rights over a state employee. And we say we are a stronger case than West versus Atkins. In West versus Atkins, you find a delegation and you find a deferral by the state. In this case, there is a delegation. There is a deferral by the state, and then the state afforded the NCAA significant assistance in saying to Tarkanian, you are now suspended. So this is a stronger case than that.
May I ask about a question about your delegation thought? Am I correct in believing that the rules that the NCAA enforces are in effect minimums? I say that you can only pay a player so much, but the Nevada could, the university could impose stricter rules without violating its obligation to the NCAA, couldn't it?
I'm sure that's true.
So it hasn't really delegated the rulemaking power. It's merely said our rules will be at least as strict as those that you prescribe.
But the delegation is broader than rulemaking power and standards, creating standards. But the NCAA, under the delegation, was permitted to have investigations, hearings, and make determinations
that were not binding unless the university agreed to abide by them.
The university did, and that's exactly what the NCAA said in its amicus brief when it sought intervention. And it said further...
Let me just be sure I understand you. For your delegation argument, you're not really relying on the fact that they delegated rulemaking power, but rather that they delegated enforcement power, is that it?
Yes.
So who made the rules would really not be critical to your case.
That's correct. But in fact, they were their rules, and which became...
Nevada did not make them any stricter than they had to.
That's correct.
Yeah. But you're saying that the NCAA had the authority to discharge or suspend a Nevada coach.
Yes. As a matter of fact, the rules, which were set forth in our appendix, indicate...
They did not have an option to withdraw from the NCAA.
Not a realistic option in any way.
They had a legal option, didn't they?
Just as the judge in Dennis versus Sparks had a legal option not to accept the alleged bribe.
Well, let me give you this example. Supposing United Airlines tells the O'Hara Airport in Chicago that we won't land here anymore because we think your airport manager is doing a sloppy job of turning on the lights or something like that at night. They just say we won't do it, and O'Hara says, well, we can't operate without United, so we'll fire him. Would United become a state actor because they have enough economic power to insist on that kind of result?
If you
want to try to say no.
It's a gray area. One can always see a situation where someone can have enough economic power to do something.
That's what you're saying this association has. And I give you another example with the same degree of economic power. You seem hesitant to say it's state action.
If there is sufficient economic power to affect them, then I would say...
So any time a private entity can, as a condition of doing business with a public entity, insist on something, why, that private entity is a state actor.
There's a big gray area in there, and I would like to... I can see a situation where an alumnus of the university would come to the president and say, I'm the biggest, I give you, donate more money than anybody else, and I will give you, I will give you additional $10 or $15 million if you fire somebody there. And I would say that gets pretty close to saying that person could be a state actor if that person is fired without due process of law.
Well,
that person might be a joint participant.
Well, what about if, say, Chrysler Motors has a plant in Wisconsin and isn't satisfied with the way it's working? So it wants to move that plant out of Wisconsin, but it says, okay, we'll negotiate with the legislature. If you'll revise certain laws thus and so and do thus and so, we won't move out. Now, does that make Chrysler a state actor in Wisconsin?
No. I would say no. That is pressure that one might get from a newspaper or something of that nature. That person has no right to demand that the state give them overt, official, significant...
Well, of course, your example, the alumnus had no, quote, right, close quote, to demand anything.
It gets very close, and that it puts them under the gun.
Well, what's the difference between the two cases? It isn't a matter of right, because neither one had any right.
I find a great gray area, and at some point, if it puts someone arguably out of business or university, then it's very important that the university must have this, otherwise it would not be able to operate. Just as in this case, the university needs this to be a member of the NCAA basketball program, which is an important matter.
Some written indication of what membership in the NCAA means?
From the standpoint of what, Justice?
What do they understand? Does a member say we will abide by the NCAA rule?
Yes. Well, the
is there something in writing to that effect?
We have not been able to find anything in writing except the rules of the NCAA. The Constitution and the bylaws say that a member agrees to abide by a Constitution, our bylaws, our rules, and our enforcement program.
So by becoming a member, you say the member has agreed?
Yes.
In advance.
Yes.
This isn't just an ad hoc situation.
Absolutely. He has agreed. And that was the exact position that the NCAA took in its amicus brief.
Mr. Lionel, let me ask you, assuming I accept your theory of adhesion contract, which is, I think, what we've been talking about, is it clear that this is an adhesion contract? I mean, that there was no other option? Aren't there a lot of universities that don't belong to the NCAA? You mean the world comes to an end if you can't belong to the NCAA? I thought probably more don't belong than do belong. Isn't that right?
No university with any kind of athletic program is not a member. Is not a member.
No university with any kind of an athletic program.
Any kind of a... Let's call it a major...
It's that much the end of the world that there was no realistic option except to belong to the NCAA.
No realistic option.
I think a lot of educators would be surprised to hear that.
Well, they can shut down their football program, basketball.
It's not in the record, is it? Is there anything in the record about how many universities belong or do not belong?
Yes, I believe there are approximately 1,000 universities, at least half of which are state universities. All the service academies are members.
You mean all?
Yes, all the service academies.
And all the universities in this country belong?
No, no, but approximately 1,000 universities.
Well, how many universities are there?
I don't know that, Marshal.
Well, what good is the figure of 1,000 if I don't know what
it compares? Well, it encompasses all universities which have major athletic programs.
I know some who don't belong.
There are? Yes.
The one I graduated from didn't belong.
I just can't help but in interjecting the fact that the University of Chicago survived without an athletic program like this.
That survived well. With respect to the Lugar case, we think we fall clearly under Lugar. The first prong of Lugar indicates two different types of situation. One, where there is a delegation, and here there is that delegation to the NCAA of the right to make the disciplinary standards and determination. And number two, that if the state imposes a rule of conduct. Now, the rule of conduct here is the NCAA saying that Jerry Tarkanian did this which he shouldn't, and there should be a two-year suspension. And the university imposed that. That clearly comes onto Lugar. And there can be no doubt that insofar as the association is concerned, its conduct is attributable to the state.
Let me ask you a question. Let's assume we agree with you that that the NCAA is a state actor insofar as Mr. Tarkanian was concerned, that he has a remedy against the university. But even if that's the case, what was the basis for the injunction against the NCAA from taking action against the university itself?
Because if it were permitted to take action against the university, the injunction that Coach Tarkanian received will not help him any. Because
Why?
If the university no longer belongs to the NCAA,
so?
It won't have a major college athletic program, he will have nothing there that he can coach.
Well, did he ask for an injunction against?
Yes, he did.
Against the NCAA?
Yes.
Was that the university?
Against both. When we amended the complaint after the remand to make so that the NCAA could become a party, we amended it and also stated a claim under 1983 against the association. And we sought an injunction. We never sought damages.
So you think that any time the NCAA thinks one of its rules has been violated, it can be forbidden to throw the member out?
No. Well, it's only if we can... the NCAA...
I don't see what the basis... even if you win on the state action thing, what's the basis for telling the NCAA that it can't suspend the university? If the university wants to keep Mr. Tarkanian on, that's fine, but it's not going to be a member.
But Coach Tarkanian would then have obtained just a Pyrrhic victory.
That's all he's entitled to.
But his constitutional rights have been infringed upon. He's been denied due process in connection with this, and he...
Well, I know, but the NCAA shouldn't be required to keep a member on that isn't living up to its rules.
The only rule that would be involved here would be the non-suspension of Coach Tarkanian.
The Constitution forbids the university from firing Coach Tarkanian without proper process, but surely the Constitution doesn't require that the university give him a major league basketball team to coach, does it?
No, it doesn't.
So then what is he? Maybe the Chief Justice is right that all he is entitled to under the Constitution is a Pyrrhic victory. That he can coach whatever basketball team the university has.
Well, it would seem to me that a court of equity could do what the court below did here. The court said he has a right to have vindicated his constitutional rights. He is not vindicated, but if we are going to say he can't continue to do what he did before, in which the court found he had a property right. In effect, if there is no injunction against the NCAA, he will have lost that property right to be that basketball coach.
Property right, not just to have a job with the university, not just to coach the university's basketball team, but a property right to coach an NCAA basketball team. That's what the Constitution guarantees him.
Yes, but also there were other rights that flowed from that, as we pointed out. He had clinics, he had other matters, and radio programs, all of which came from the fact that he was a basketball coach at the university.
Well, but your position, as I understand it, is that if the NCAA is a state actor, it has to follow constitutional procedures when it imposes sanctions on anybody, and you would really require them to remodel their whole procedural mechanisms for dealing with this kind of case. And maybe, if you're right, it seems to me they would have an obligation to follow due process procedures and not use private investigators to rely on hearsay and that sort of thing. So what really is at stake is what kind of procedures they can use when the member that's being challenged is a public entity, right?
That's correct. And in fact, as a result of this case, as a result of a Congressional Oversight Committee investigation which followed shortly thereafter, the NCAA has changed many of their rules with respect to this type of investigation.
I take it then that even if you win, as Justice Stevens suggests, if the NCAA wanted to take some action against a state university, even though no employee was involved, it would have to follow the due process procedures.
Proceeding against the university?
Yes.
I frankly don't know the answer. The university is under injunction not to...
Well, the university has become a member of this association and the delegated that makes this big delegation, and so and the NCAA has some rules, but it must comport with due process?
Yes, it must.
In moving against the university?
No, that may be just private activity. That may be just private activity.
Well, if it is, what is the basis here for an injunction against the against the NCAA from moving against the university, even if it can be called a state actor by Mr. Tarkanian?
Because then Mr. Tarkanian his property right has not been protected.
Well,
he's been denied due process of law.
You certainly are putting the NCAA in a strange position of not being able to throw out a member that refuses to abide by its rules. Just as a matter of equity, I would think the injunction is very suspect against the NCAA.
The NCAA was really the moving party here. The NCAA is really responsible for this denial of due process to Coach Tarkanian.
Well, he's had his remedy. Against the university. He's no longer suspended.
I submit that would be a meaningless remedy and that the injunction against the NCAA...
He's still going to be on, paid his salary. What more does he want?
Radio programs.
Radio programs. Constitutional right to radio programs.
His due process rights were violated.
Well, his due process rights were violated were procedural, weren't they?
Also substantive.
What was the substantive violation?
Because there was no basis for the findings. The court found that they were substantively violated.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Lionel. Mr. Lee, you have 4 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. In answer to Justice White's question, the obligation that the UNLV has undertook appears on page 80 of the joint appendix. And what it is, of course, is an agreement to, it's on fundamental policy 2B, shall be obligated to apply and enforce this legislation, and the enforcement program of the association shall be applied to the institution when it fails to fulfill this obligation. What the UNLV agreed to do was to abide by the NCAA's rules. What it did not agree to do and could not have agreed to do as a governmental entity was to delegate any kind of discipline of state employees or any other governmental function to the NCAA. And the way it's tested is this. Assume that what President Bepler had said back in 1977 was, no, our answer to the order to show cause is we cannot and will not, because under our judgment, he just doesn't deserve to be suspended, and that is a function that is non-delegable as a matter of Nevada state law. What the NCAA would have done at that point is to look to other sanctions. They would not have and could not have required that he be dismissed.
So you say it's like the university is looking around for a set of rules to have in its university, and it suddenly runs across the NCAA as promulgated a bunch of rules that it recommends for universities to adopt. And so the university says, gee, here's a bunch of rules, and we'll just adopt them.
No, as a condition of membership, they have agreed.
They just simply agreed to adopt this set of rules.
That is correct, as a condition of membership. And in the event that they decide not to follow those rules or not to follow the NCAA procedures, then they can either accept. It wasn't just a matter of NCAA membership, though if it were, the legal rule would have still been the same. They could have accepted other less severe sanctions, such as an extended period of probation, fewer scholarships.
Well, let's assume you're wrong on the state action that Tarkanian is entitled to a remedy. What was the basis for the injunction against the NCAA taking action against the university?
Because state court judge said that UNLV had acted wrongfully, and there was a derivative right from the NCAA. I do not defend that. I do not think that's right. But that was the basis for the injunction. And I want to stress that the only relief that we're asking for is the relief of the release of the injunction against the NCAA.
And do you argue that even if it's held to be a state actor, that injunction shouldn't stand?
No.
But that's the argument.
I'm not saying that even if we're held.
That's the question that I ask you. Even if you lose on state action, why should you be entitled to forbidden to act against the university?
I think there are good reasons that we shouldn't, but we also think that we are not a state actor for reasons that have been stated. What this whole argument this morning has demonstrated is the mischief that you get into once you open the door beyond those two Lugar requirements. There are good reasons for those two Lugar requirements, and also for the rule in Blum versus Uretsky. All that happened here was a response by a governmental entity to a non-governmental entity. Blum versus Uretsky says that that is not sufficient. And once you open that door, you get into problems like the United Airlines hypothetical. And like the numerous others that are raised in our brief, there are lots of accrediting agencies, for example, that set standards, private entities that set standards for governmental entities to abide by. Are they bound by the full panoply of 14th Amendment and 1983 restrictions on their area of private activity, and also subject to damage actions? We would hope not.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument.